Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Your inner geek wants to come out and play, but where to go? Join Vernon Wells, the ultimate club where you and your fellow geeks can hang out, play games, and just nerd out 24/7. Whether you love RPGs, video games, or are just a major fan of sci-fi and geek culture, Vernon Wells has something for everyone. Let your geek flag fly at Vernon Wells. Sign up today and see for yourself. VNW.club. That's VNW.club.
Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I'm the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hello.
We've got Walker, Mr. Chris Walker, Mr. Walk Like a Flan.
Ding dong, yo, ding dong.
And the show's namesake, BJ Shea and Spicoli, are on assignment. So, mic duties go to...
The Prodigy.
Once again, you have made a mistake.
I was about to say something along those lines.
For those who want to get a hold of us, how can they do so, Vicky?
Contact the Prodigy. No, I'm just kidding.
Right here. Right now.
You can check out our website. It has all our podcasts and info, bjgeeknation.com. And it's Facebook's BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Just search for it. Easy, easy peasy. Lemon squeezy.
Lemon squeezy.
That's with two Z's.
Sorry, I took one of those caffeine pills, so I'm awake.
Wow.
This is not going to be a good day.
I'm feeling it.
It's not just your purse that's vibrating then.
Yes.
Copy that.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at BJ Geek Nation. Send us a text or leave us a voicemail at 1-980-224-3353. You can also send us an email at bjgeeknation@gmail.com. And you can watch all our videos at youtube.com/bjgeeknation. And the reason my purse vibrates, it's one of those toys from the 90s that, like, with the little balls with the little knobbies. What were they called?
I forget. But those things were awesome.
That's not 90s. A good description of a toy that you're trying to describe.
You don't want
to
put one of those right in
your mouth. No, what were they called? You see them at all the stores and they put them with those little dogs that do the flips.
Looks like a sea mine.
Well, while you look that up,
90s I got toys an email. That vibrate.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that's
safe search.
Oh, my God. It did give it to me.
Of course it did.
It's a Bumble Ball.
Bumble Ball. That was it.
Thank
yeah, Bumble
you.
Ball.
Wow.
Yeah, I was working at Target when those things were good. They were big. Seriously.
Yeah, Target's up back that long ago.
Speaking of toys from the 90s, we got an email from Brad who was like, hey, did you see the new Pokemon update? P.S. Do people still play Pokemon? And this is the Pokemon Go update.
Oh, okay.
So, yes, there is a new patch for iOS, and it is patch 1.7 and then 0.037 for Android. And this is kind of interesting because other than some normal bug fixes, they have implemented the buddy system.
What?
So you can choose a Pokemon that you want to be your buddy, and then as you walk around, you will get candy after you hit certain benchmarks.
What kind of candy?
You get the candy of that Pokemon.
That is not candy. As good as I thought it was.
If your buddy is the Magikarp.
Magikarp would be my buddy.
Yeah, it takes about 400 candies in order for him to evolve to Gyarados. Is that how I say it?
Gyarados.
Gyarados.
Gyarados?
Gyarados.
Gyarados.
Garatrace, man.
Stop.
Okay.
You guys make my brain hurt.
So you will get one of those and you'll be able to level up your guys eventually just by putting into the walking instead of maybe you're not in a location that has your favorite Pokemon. Maybe you can't find a Charmander. So if you actually were able to catch one, you can have it be your buddy. You can walk around and you can get it. And it's simple. It's really easy to be able to hook up the buddy system. You click on your player icon on the bottom left of the main screen and go to the menu on the bottom right. Then you hit the buddy button. When you click on that menu, and then you'll have the option to choose a buddy Pokemon. Once selected, you must walk somewhere between 1 and 5 kilometers to earn a piece of candy for that Pokemon. For example, Bulbasaur needs to walk 3 kilometers to earn a Bulbasaur candy. I know for a fact that the Magikarp only takes one because I have the Magikarp as my buddy. And it looks like they even said in order to evolve a Bulbasaur into an Ivysaur, and I'm probably ruining these, I'm sorry, Vicky, need to walk about 75 kilometers. To evolve an Ivysaur into a Venusaur, Sorry again. 300 kilometers should do the trick.
Can you say it again for me?
Venusaur?
Venusaur.
Okay, so Vino. It is Venusaur. Like
Venusaur,
Venus.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
These are so hard to figure out. The buddy, like they said, the buddy system solves the issue of not encountering enough unique Pokemon to evolve the one that you already do have caught.
Right.
And it will be, and also with the new buddy system, Pokemon Go's latest update made it easier to select smaller Pokemon on the screen, fixed an issue where eggs hatched without an egg hatching animation, and added support for Pokemon Go Plus, a wrist companion accessory that lets you catch Pokemon and collect items without using your phone. This is usually along the lines of your Apple Watch.
There we go.
So there is a lot of interesting things going on with the Pokemon Go.
So do you guys still play?
I do still play.
Yo.
I still play pretty frequently. It's one of those fun things that I can do at work in the middle of doing other things. We have a chance, you know, in the industry that we work in radio, so there's commercial breaks where I can kind of walk around, and I'll walk, and we have a couple of Pokestops at the station. I can go swipe those, get some things, try to level up. I'm literally 1500 EXP from level 23.
Dang.
And it's killing me because it's so slow once you get into these later levels. Like, it takes 100,000 EXP to get from 22 to 23.
Damn.
And at that point, and at this point right now, like, once I've got that, I've only had just over 400,000 EXP that I've gotten since I started playing on July 6th.
That sounds like a grind.
It is. Like, once you get to level 20, they're just like, all right, now it's time to grind. How much do you love this game?
Maybe walking is good for you.
It is, and it's pretty awesome, too. Like, I really, it's one of those ones where I'm, even though it is a grind, at least it makes it worthwhile when you're like, well, I'm just going to go for a walk and maybe have to bang out a whole, you know, a 5K in order to get this egg done, and then you realize, oh, that means I've just walked 3 miles.
That'd be awesome. I just walked 3 miles, yeah. Dude. Yeah,
running a 5K to get some Pokemon?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty sweet. What Pokemon are you guys running? What's your favorite one? What's your level? What's this at?
My favorite Pokemon, like, I don't know if it's necessarily my favorite Pokemon.
Hitmonlee.
Because I do have a Hitmonlee, but my biggest Pokemon is a Lampras, which is 1972 on the old combat power.
All right.
He's maxed out for my level, so that's kind of fun. But I think the cutest one, it's kind of weird how I say that like that, but is Snorlax. And he was the first big,
Snorlax,
mostly evolved one, and he's kind of my spirit animal.
I feel like that's very fitting.
I like it. What about you, Chris?
I just managed to evolve my Meowth into a Persian.
Oh.
And he's so pretty.
You still got all that money?
I got all that.
Payday.
Payday.
You just transfer over with me at Meowth, yeah.
Oh, no, that's long gone.
Oh, it's gone?
Yeah. No,
what?
I spent it on incubators, man.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Oh, I was going to say.
Like, exclusively.
So, fun story. Meowth in the game has an attack or an ability called Payday, which actually he makes it rain money.
What?
Because he's the best cat ever.
He's the best cat ever.
But I wish my cat would do that.
Sorry, so Carl.
My Persian just has Feint Attack and Night Slash.
There was an episode where, so Meowth in Pokemon, he knows how to talk because, so his backstory.
He's the best cat ever.
No, so he's kind of a douche because he's part of Team Rocket.
Yeah.
He's kind of a douche cat.
If you're the only cat that can talk, you're going to be a douche.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But the reason, his tragic backstory, he was in love with this other Meowth and like in Hollywood and stuff, but he was a poor Meowth. So he's like, I need to impress her by learning to talk, like walk upright. So he taught himself how to walk upright by watching these dancers through a window and then learn to talk and stuff like a human to impress her. And she's like, no, you're still poor trash to me.
Rude. How rude.
But so he can never, because he spent so much energy, he even said, he's like, I spent too much energy learning how to walk and talk that I will never learn Payday and he probably won't ever evolve. Unless he probably got the stone.
That is pretty tragic.
That's rough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what are you gonna do?
But probably my favorite one. I have my top Pokemon is a Flareon. It's only 1387 for CP, but I named her Miss Kitty Fantastico.
Ah.
Miss Fantastico, fire!
Which for you Buffy the Vampire Slayer fans, you're feeling me out there.
Side note: right now, I'm sitting down in the studio and I'm looking to look at all my Pokemon, see which one's my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
It says you're going too fast. Pokemon Go should not be played while driving. I'm not driving. Yeah. I am not moving.
Yeah, it's one of the updates, and unfortunately, if GPS gets a little wonky, just ruin it.
It looks like you're whipping around at you know, warp speed.
Sometimes though, that works out because it'll count that for your
it'll
walking
count for steps. I know,
and so you're like, yes, because it doesn't actually have a pedometer. It's based everything on the GPS. So if you have kind of an iffy signal, it kind of lets you
count
those.
That's another great thing about this studio and where we work all day long, because the GPS is so wonky right here. It looks like I'm just doing circles all around this place, man. It's great. And I'm like, okay, walk off that egg. I don't mind. I'll sit here.
I think Vicky's phone just knows she took a caffeine pill.
Yeah.
You're doing too fast.
You guys got a Wobbuffet? That was my favorite Pokemon.
A what?
Wobbuffet.
Yeah. I don't think that's on here yet.
What? The Boba Fett?
No.
Wobba, man.
No, we don't have that one yet. I don't think that sounds
weird. He just wobbed back and forth. That was his move. He was like a really cool defensive Pokemon because he could like bounce attacks.
He's kind of a dummy like in the cartoon.
Yeah, but he's always happy.
Wobbuffet.
Oh, that one looks cool. It looks like a big, actually blob. Kind of an upside down raindrop. With four speaking testicles.
Of, I was going to say, speaking of why my purse is vibrating, hey, it's a Wobbuffet.
Yikes. So, yeah.
But he was always causing problems because one of the members from Team Rocket accidentally captured him, and he'd always pop up at the wrong time, like when they tried to battle Wobbuffet.
That's awesome. Let us know what your favorite Pokemon is. I love that stuff. Another thing that is out there that I'm going to actually have to buy, there's going to be a black and chrome version of Mad Max Fury Road coming in December.
I'm listening.
So this is very interesting. So on December 6th, the Black and Chrome Edition will come out in a two film collection that also includes the theatrical version of the film. And it's going to have a black and white version. Here's how George Miller decided to describe the film. And he says, one thing I've noticed is that the default position for everyone is to desaturate post-apocalyptic movies. There's only two ways to go, though. Make them black and white. The best version of this movie is black and white, but people reserve that for art movies now. The other version is to go all out on the color. The usual teal and orange thing, that's all the colors we had to work with. The desert's orange and the sky is teal, and we could either desaturate it or crank it up to differentiate the movie. Mm-hmm. Plus, it gets really tiring watching this dull, desaturated color unless you go all the way and make it black and white. So that's what he's decided to do. Awesome. The original movie is super colorful.
Yeah.
Amazing color in that movie, and that was one of the reasons why I loved it. But I do want to see this in black and white.
Pro tip?
Yeah?
Turn down the color on your TV.
That's work. I can buy this.
A lot of work.
I can buy this. And
we had the same thing when that Mist special edition came out.
Yeah.
And I said, just turn down the color on your TV.
And that was even when they did The Walking Dead. They did The Walking Dead in black and white, and they showed that, and other people were just turning down the color to see that. And yeah, you can, and maybe not spend all the money on this
thing. Which is not to say that this new edition doesn't sound cool, and I will probably buy it. But I mean, if that's really what you want to go for, try it now, man.
And another addition to this is actually, and I'm not going to buy just the black and chrome edition, I've realized, because same day, they're releasing the Mad Max High Octane Collection.
Oh, man.
This includes Mad Max, Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, and Mad Max Fury Road, as well as the Black and Chrome Edition.
Oh,
it's a
man.
Blu-ray collection that will include a 4K Ultra HD version and a UV digital copy of Mad Max Fury Road. So many things on this. It includes commentary by George Miller, which also is in the Black and Chrome Edition, just the one by itself. So a lot of ways for you to spend your money. I am getting this because I love Mad Max. I love the post-apocalyptic diesel punk sort of thing. Even just playing with Overwatch, one of my favorite characters just to kind of troll people at this point is Junkrat. Which I love from the fact that I was like, okay, he's a diesel punk kind of guy, and then I clicked on him and realized, oh, he's Australian. This is perfect. They figured it out, and they had a lot of fun with it.
Of course, the most annoying character in the game. He just lobs grenades.
Yeah.
That's all he does.
I don't have to worry about anything. Like, yeah, he sets up traps. I just sit back and I launch grenades, and then eventually I get to use my super, which is a giant tire that I just roll around until I blow up and kill somebody. It's amazing. Speaking of Overwatch, Joe, you've been playing competitive season 2, correct?
Season 2.
I finally hit 25 at the end of season 1, so I literally got to play zero games, no placement games, nothing. And WoW Legion has been taking up all of my time, so I completely forgot about Overwatch and coming in for the second season.
Man, that's what everyone's been falling into. Even my roommates in that he plays like 3 hours a day, I feel like. My God. But yes, Overwatch Season 2 did start. Competitive mode is back. There have been a lot of changes. Zenyatta is now one of the best characters in the game.
Oh,
yes, very interesting. Genji got nerfed.
Now,
people
were saying that he needed to be nerfed, but a lot of other people were speculating that it's not so much that he needed to be nerfed, it was just that up-close melee was one of the more powerful powerful tactics at this point.
Yeah, he's just one of those, you know, a movement in a game, you know, the freedom to jump up walls and that kind of thing is always usually the most powerful, mm-hmm. and he just had the right skill set along with it to be a little bit too good.
Yeah.
So, you know, they just dumbed him out a little bit, and now he's fair.
Okay, that's awesome. Do you have a favorite that you've been running with?
Oh, man. I finally got on the Zenyatta plane, train because I never played him before.
And he's the healing floaty dude, right?
Yep, with the orbs.
Okay, yeah. I've never played him, but I got the epic skin where he looks like an old swami.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he looks really cool. I'm never going to play him.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's kind of a healer, but he also does damage because he has a ranged-based attack and an armor debuff kind of a thing.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's been really cool. Not a whole lot of changes besides that. There's a new map, Uvenwall, something like that. Hard to pronounce.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a castle map.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. Other than that, yeah, season two, so your points got reset. See, it's player places matches again. Sorry, Rev.
Oh,
and then
gosh.
They'll dump you into one of the four leagues of, you know, gold, silver, platinum, diamond, or master if you're super good.
Ooh, and what are you at this point?
I am platinum on the verge of diamond.
Oh, so is it based off of your wins and losses at that point once you get placed?
Yeah, there's like a secret MMR system for how you actually get ranked in your division.
Okay.
And then you get points that once you accumulate to a certain amount of points, it then bumps you up a rank. So I think between 2,600 and 2,900 or something is gold or platinum, and then so 3,000 is diamond.
Can you be deranked? Like,
yes.
Okay, so like if you're not doing very good, you can go up to platinum and then get your ass kicked down to down to gold if you're really bad.
Yeah, and that happens because if you solo queue like I do, you do not do very well.
That's an interesting thing that I always had a problem with like League of Legends and even Heroes of the Storm was that I don't necessarily like to get in a big group of people that I know and hang out with. I like to just solo queue because I don't know how much time I'm going to spend and I don't want to set up
exactly.
time and ruin a team by being on it, but also by leaving if I've got to go and do something. So I like to solo queue, but it's rough going, man.
Yeah, I say that when you first join a game, it's actually not bad. The people aren't that toxic or anything, but mm-hmm. they don't like to switch. No one likes to really do strategy beyond that.
Yeah.
So, people kind of get a little stubborn. And, well, if you're like me, you'll rage a little bit.
I would love to see you rage. I can't imagine you
you're
losing
so
your mind.
You're so chill most of the time around here, so it's kind of funny to, like when I say, I nerd rage at something, everyone's
seen you lose your freaking mind.
I have, and I do.
It's a lot of, do your job! You have one job, do it!
I love it. So, new setup for that. Do you know how long the season lasts?
I don't know how long the season lasts. I'm hoping longer than the last one, because this was a quick turnaround.
Yeah, it was only like, God, it seemed like maybe 2 months at max.
I was playing the beta for a while, so for me, I don't actually really know. It just kicked in all of a sudden, but the game's still great. They're doing a lot of balancing changes, and I feel like the overtime rules got fixed, so now you don't end up in stupid coin flip scenarios and that kind of a thing.
That's
it's
good.
Way better. So they've done a good job on that. So I'm hoping to see some more competitive games in the future.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Joe. I've got a list, an article that I found from Geek and Sundry that were talking about the 5 ways to enhance your gaming lair. So this is the dungeon where you would go and experience Dungeons and Dragons, and you would invite people in for your tabletop RPGs. And some of these are fun because it's not so much about the game itself, but helping create an atmosphere for your gaming. So they're talking about stuff like sight. Many dungeon masters default to visuals, such as the primary sense described in any scene, but why not take it all the way and deck out your room with actual weapons and shields and banners, or maybe even weapon-shaped ice cubes? They say the visual decor throughout your gaming lounge based on the game you are running helps give the passive inspiration and shape imaginations for the players and the DMs alike. This could be something along the lines of if you do some live action role play, have some of the foam weapons and the stuff that you have hanging around, or the armor, or even just the posters that would encompass that sort of thing.
Lit candles.
Yes, absolutely. Music is another one. They even talked about that with sound, music playlists. Sometimes you go with epic folk metal or pirate metal, depending on the game you're playing.
What's pirate metal?
That would be
like Ailstorm and stuff.
Oh.
There's a band called Ailstorm.
Oh my God, they're amazing.
Vicky, no, it's just on the tip of her tongue. She's like been waiting for us to talk about this. Have you guys heard Ailstorm?
Yeah.
It's this great pirate metal band.
There's another one I got the CD for because I missed them. The band was the main band that was going to play was a band called, was it Mac Sabbath?
Oh, yeah. It's the McDonald's-based Black Sabbath cover band.
Which was, what? Yeah. So everyone's dressed like all the McDonald's characters, but they play Black Sabbath music, but they kind of change the lyrics to fit around McDonald's theme kind of things.
This is awesome.
Which is like, you know, after the first couple songs, you're like, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
I'm over this.
I don't want to be McDonald's.
But I missed it. So all these pirates are walking around. I'm like, what did I miss? And I bought their CD, and I totally forgot their name. But Ailstorm is pretty awesome. We'll see if I can find something
of
theirs.
Is it like Pirates of the Caribbean music, then?
It's
kind of. If when we had Abney Park in, it's kind of along those lines of that sort of stuff.
Less steampunky.
And they're more steampunky, definitely. But sometimes they'll just talk about, airship pirates getting their ale and getting the Captain Rum. That's
I can't complain about that. That sounds awesome to me.
Yeah. Ads.
Yeah. I'll
play them in 20 seconds.
Nice. Well, some of the other things they talked about is... touch, just the fact that maybe if you have the ability not to just sit around a folding table and folding chairs, mm-hmm. you get some of those maybe geek chic tables. Those are super expensive, mm-hmm. but a lot of the times super worth it. And if you're handy and you can actually create your own stuff, you can create things that can do that. Dice towers are a really good, somewhat cheap way mm-hmm. to kind of incorporate that. And also so you don't lose your friggin' dice.
Right. Dude, I'm totally like picturing, like when I heard touch, I thought like if you're going to be, depending on what your costume is or what your character is, like your character would wear velvet or something or leather.
Yeah, totally.
Like
yeah.
have like a leather bag, just sit there and, you know.
Well, yeah, that's how you keep your dice bag or the pouches. And
I've seen some made out of chainmail, too.
Oh, yeah. There's some really beautiful things set up with that. Even like smell or taste.
Incense, man.
Yeah. The smell is.
Oh, I got pirates. Joe's face.
It's like punk. It's like punk, but pirates. That's amazing.
Oh, and their music video has a bunch of wenches.
Well, yeah.
Oh, there's a dwarf in this band. I love it.
That's amazing. Going back to like smell and taste, they're talking about scent. We talked about candles, mm-hmm. incense. These are things that can help incorporate that sort of thing in that. Taste, they're talking about, no one needs to explain food and booze, but if you
get some mead.
Exactly. Like if you're going to be doing that, get some, like, and
meat.
I know, yeah, get it just like a big old turkey leg that you get at
turkey.
The fair.
Or just a meat platter if you're too lazy.
Exactly that too. That's usually a better idea with that. I know that there is a website and the name is, just totally escaping me right now, that does music and sound effects for your, just like you can just run through your website mm-hmm. and you can then run through your phone and have a Bluetooth speaker and kind of do that, and you can set it up and do different things on that.
What I've done too, like when we played the Game of Thrones together, mm-hmm. I'll just go to Pandora and type in Game of Thrones and it'll give me music, which Ooh. Is either Game of Thronesy or sometimes I'll throw in from other shows like Tudors or whatever.
Yeah.
And all that vibe.
But
and
it'll always have that kind of vibe to
it.
Exactly.
Game of Thrones would be the perfect vibe.
And so I would love to hear what other people do to help set the mood in their games. Another thing from that, Chris, you are going, this is, I'm really excited for this.
Yeah.
Because we got a bunch of the D&D modules, and including that is the Curse of Strahd.
Yes.
Now, I know that the Storm King's Thunder is the thing going on right now mm-hmm. With the play sessions for D&D. We're a little bit behind, but we want to record a session of us playing the Curse of Strahd.
Yeah.
So we've been going around recruiting some local friends who are in the improv business and also in the acting and also who are uber nerds and love D&D and have done all sorts of different experiences with that. We're going to get together and we're going to be recording a session of us playing. I don't know how long this is going to last because we're going to do this a couple times and try to get through the entire adventure. So this may be a long form thing that will come out in many different segments.
Yeah.
We're kind of figuring that out. But getting into that, it's kind of interesting because as a game master, you have to do a lot of preparation.
A lot of preparation.
And I'm doing that the same because I'm going to be starting a 13th Age game. Nothing I'm recording, just something with friends.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of prep that you have to do. And some people are like, well, how do you get into GMing if you want to do so? So I figured I'd just throw that question to you.
Oh.
And what is starting off if, say, you know the system that you want to play and
yeah.
you're interested in it and you've been playing it for a while and you're like, I think I want to run my own adventure.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the first things that you look at to try to get this set up?
Well, this is sort of the classic actor who wants to direct a situation. I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons my whole life, and almost literally, I think second grade was the first time I cracked one of those books and started playing. You definitely want to pick a system that you're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not, if it's a new system, but you're excited because you like the idea of it, really, really get to know your material. You know, read the books. Don't just sit down with everybody and say, okay, well, we'll figure this out on the fly, because you're not going to have a fun time with that.
Know the base mechanics.
Exactly.
If it's a D20 system, figure out how combat works.
Precisely.
What D20 system means.
Yeah. No, that's a good point, too, because
exactly.
some people don't.
Yeah.
Or if you have a system that doesn't do that, like Shadowrun, runs basically off of a D6 mm-hmm. system, or I mean, even the old Star Wars game did the same thing.
D6 Star Wars, yeah.
White Wolf had the D10 system mm-hmm. that was really kind of wonky, but once you figured it out, it flowed well.
Exactly. These are all very good systems, and people have spent their time making them good systems, so you owe it to your players to know the systems. And you owe it to these people to know the system well enough to be able to run it without having to reference and check books every 2 seconds when you need to look something up.
Yeah, but at the same point, one of the things I've figured out is you don't necessarily need to know everything about the character, like classes. One of the things I've been doing with my 13th Age game was just reading what each class is about
mm-hmm.
and then make sure and put it on the onus of the players to know that class and know what you want to do. So when I look at your character sheet, I see something and I'm like, okay, we can look that up and we can figure it out as we go.
Sure.
Without spending a whole bunch of time, but I still know what the class is about. Like with the necromancer class, I know you're going to summon up some demons
right.
and you're going to summon up some undead
dead
and
stuff,
now
yeah.
you're going to figure out, well, how do you summon a creature? Okay, well, let's look that up. Okay, now I know that, but put the onus on them to also make sure that they know what they're doing and what they're getting into.
Yeah, and that's another great step, too, is make sure that the people that you're playing with understand their part in all of this. If we're going to sit down together and we're going to play one of these games and we're going to tell this great epic story of whatever it is, which is really what role-playing boils down to, is telling a good story, make sure that they are comfortable enough to engage.
Mm-hmm.
And part of my job as a game master is making sure people are that comfortable. And if I don't know my stuff, or if I don't make an inviting atmosphere for whatever reason, then the players are not going to have any kind of fun. But you also, one of the things that you mentioned very briefly there, and it caught my attention, was that you don't necessarily need to know everything. Once you've got the nuts and bolts down enough that you understand how the game works and how the game flows, go ahead and play. Don't get bogged down by the rules. Don't become the rule jockey of the game. That's not your job. Your job is to guide the player's experience and to make sure that they're enjoying themselves.
That's a really good point on that end, too. And also, you can tell your... like, I think one aspect of that is when you talked about comfort level of your players, let them know what kind of adventure that's going to be.
Exactly.
Sometimes some people just want to have a hack and slash murder hobo
yeah.
adventure.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
And there isn't. At the same point, if they are people who are more interested in weaving a story and not so much about the mechanics,
mm-hmm.
kind of fit it in so that sort of way.
Yeah.
It's And one of the big things that I've learned from playing a lot of MMOs and such is that don't make it you, the GM, versus the player thing. If you've got a specific story you want to hit and you want to hit all of these things,
mm-hmm.
Be ready for your players to maybe not think in the same way that you are.
Right.
And so you may have to guide them some ways, but if they're like saying, oh, I want to go check out this town, and that's something you haven't written up because you hadn't planned for them to do that,
right.
Let them go and just kind of be ready to improv around with that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of the hardest things to be able to do is when somebody, and they always will, someone will go off course and
yeah.
you'll have to figure out what they want out of this game, and also kind of you'll have to figure out how to kind of guide them back into it.
Yeah, have a couple of what if sessions with yourself or with another player or another game master, and say, well, what if they wander off into this other village where they don't really need to go, or there's nothing there for them, and well, do I even need that village in this game at that point? You know, is there some way for me to either write it out or make sure that there's somebody that intercepts them before they get there and waste a bunch of their time and say, you know, follow me over to this other thing, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Being able to think on the fly is key, is very essential, because every time, I guarantee you, your players are going to come up with something that you didn't think of. I promise you they will. They absolutely will. So just be ready with some backup kind of stuff. And that's what things like random encounter rolls are for, or just being able to get people back on track. Because it's one thing for people to want to explore and to do all of these other things, but as a GM, you know that it's a big, huge waste of their time, and it's going to bog things down.
And you have to keep people in character, too, right? Because you can't give someone information if they're acting out of character.
And this is true.
And that's a big metagaming thing. When somebody looks up, it's like, well, on page 473, it says this and this and this. A big question to ask them is, like, how would your character know this?
Right.
And if they can give a good excuse or a good reason, then you can possibly incorporate it. But don't always bend to their whims.
Right.
Players want to be the most awesome and the coolest thing ever. And a lot of times, this is why you want to do this. These are stories about heroes doing heroic things.
Yeah.
So I just joined a group of people, and I just designed my character.
Ooh, fun!
But apparently he was telling me that we're going to be taking turns being the DM.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
But we're going to follow the book one. We're not making up our own, just because everyone has different varying levels of expertise on this.
Yeah.
So two of the guys have been playing since they were little kids.
Okay.
And I'm not sure. I know one of the guy's girlfriends is going to play. I didn't get to meet her yesterday because she showed up like way late. And I wasn't about to stay up till midnight.
Oh, gosh, no.
On a work night. But I did create my character, because I had one where you went to Wizards of the Coast. I had that character that they designed for me.
Yeah, your little rogue.
My little monk.
Oh, yeah, you had the monk.
I think I still have. I have my paper here still.
Aww,
I kept it because I thought it was sweet. I was a level one monk that was human, and I was lawful good with a background of guild artisan. I was a brewer.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question on this, because there are 9 alignments, and this is a big thing, because you don't want to have characters that are necessarily against the alignments for other for other players.
Right.
But you kind of need to know what your alignment is. Vicky, to you, what does lawful good mean?
It means somebody who follows the rules and generally tries to go in the way of what is good. So you can follow the rules, I think, if you're bad, but you follow the bad guy's rules or the rules of the bad. And I feel like you follow everything that is right and you do good, as much good as possible.
And that's a good point on that, because I think that's a good question you need to ask. If your game has an alignment section, you need to ask your players, what does that mean to you? Because chaotic good for a lot of people is following my own moral code.
And that's what mine is on my new character I designed.
And so that's a really good thing. But then you get someone who's like, I want to be true neutral. And it's like, do you know what that means?
Do you know what that means?
Because a true neutral character, there's a very good chance that during the tide of a battle, if the team's winning, you should be doing something to help the other side.
Yeah.
And not all the time, because you don't really want to sabotage your group, but that's one of the problems that you fall into having an alignment like a true neutral. I just basically say, unless you're doing a villain's campaign, never have anybody chaotic evil.
Right.
Because it's the Joker at that point.
Chaotic evil, chaotic evil, it can be the Joker, but it can also be an incredible... a really well played chaotic evil character can actually be a lot of fun. It's the lawful evil ones that you got to watch out for.
Those are essentially the lawyers.
Oh, they break everything, though. Oh,
yeah, man. And that's the thing, is they look at the rules, and it's a rules lawyer, really, because it's someone who says, I understand that I shouldn't murder someone, but this rule here says that, you can get away with a little bit of murder if this happens.
There
and they just so happen to do that.
There are some fantastic websites out there that break down different types of alignment, and most games have some version or other of the Dungeons & Dragons system for alignments and the difference between lawful and chaotic and good and evil and true neutrals and all of this stuff. But my favorite is, if you go to the Wikipedia page and you look up alignment, alignment, and I think it comes up RPG or something mm-hmm. like this. It has not only a description of what each alignment sort of is embodied, mm-hmm. the type of character that each alignment is, but it gives you examples from literature, from movies, from TV shows.
See, the
like
reason
that.
I understand it is because I saw a meme, and it was they took the Firefly cast.
Uh-huh, yep.
And
yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
That's
perfect.
That's how I kind of figured it. I'm like, yeah. Oh, that makes sense, and I like that they included little quotes. Like, for example, and I'm pulling it up right now.
Go for it.
Lawful good was book. Says, if you can't do something smart, do something right.
Mm-hmm.
Neutral good, which Zoe? Yeah.
Zoe.
Neutral good. Big damn hero, sir. She's like, yep. I'm just doing good, but I don't really care.
But yeah,
pretty
the
chill.
Law is not important. Doing good is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chaotic good, which is Malcolm Reynolds. Mm-hmm. I aim to misbehave. Like, overall, he's a good guy. He's like, usually, for good, but he's like, he'll kill somebody.
Han Solo. Right.
So yeah. Han Solo is also chaotic good.
Yeah, yeah. You know, smuggler with a heart of gold. That yes. sort of thing.
He will do bad things in the name of good.
Mm-hmm.
Unlawful things, many times.
And I forget this character's name because he was only in there for a second, and I'm going to rewatch Firefly
the agent.
Soon. The agent, lawful neutral, we're mm-hmm. making a better world, all of them better worlds. True neutral, which is Summer Glau's character.
Yeah.
Kind of the wild card at that point.
Wild card.
Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, doing your own thing.
Yeah, so
literally.
That, I'll post that mm-hmm. just because it's a lot of fun.
Vicky, another thing you want to ask your players is, what is your backstory with your character? Because you have mm-hmm. your race and your class, and what are you in this new one?
So I am a rock gnome. I am one of the, because there's either rock gnome or forest gnome, uh-huh. and I wanted to be more of a tinkerer,
mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. When I was coming up with this list, I thought I was super behind everyone else, and they're like, holy crap, you got a lot of stuff done. The background stuff is easy, like picking what you want, easy in the sense of like trying to develop a character, because I did change my personality traits and all that a bunch of times for my background mm-hmm. thing. I went from gnome, then I decided I'll be a rock gnome. And then I decided for my class and level I was going to be a rogue. And then I had to pick what kind of rogue. So I wanted to be an arcane trickster because the background character, what I want for my, the gnomes are, they're really fun and they're very inviting. And if they trust you, they're just like, let's party, let's have a good time, let's live life to the fullest. And they love adventures. They love seeing what the world has out there for them. And I really identified with that. So my character's name, I named her Nyx Double Lock Turin. Double Lock because I like the idea of you should probably double lock your stuff because she's going to get into it.
Nice.
And they love nicknames, but they only stick with three I actually did a pretty good job remembering all this stuff. Gnomes typically love millions of names. They love nicknames, but because a lot of like humans and other races don't really like that, they'll only stick with their first name, last name, and a nickname. So Double Lock is a cute nickname, but she's going to be the background I've kind of designed for her. She loves playing jokes on people, likes messing with people. She had an old crew of people that she used to travel with and go see the world with, but for different reasons, they're no longer with her, so she seeks adventure. Only problem is, that's cost money. So she steals. She loves to steal, and she won't steal for the sake of, like, hey, I'm greedy and I want all the money in the world. She's like, I just steal for either what I need mm-hmm. to help others. She's a very Robin Hood kind of character. She sees someone poor, she'll steal from someone else. Here you go. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Definitely chaotic good on that one.
Or sometimes just for funsies. So like when the crew, it's like, hey, by the way, like I know we're on our adventure, but I've had your wallet for the last like
I jacked your ass
30 minutes. Do you want it back? Like just a mess because she's constantly all that stuff. Like personality traits. Because I also wanted to make her a charlatan. I went back and forth between deciding if I wanted to make her a criminal or an artisan. Because she's a tinkerer, so mm-hmm. those are typically artisans. But I decided on charlatan because I thought it'd be funny to have this tiny little gnome who was a thief and who's really good at deception, but also be, you know,
a little bit of a ham?
A little bit of a whore.
Oh, wow. Well, there okay we go. Then. I was going to say maybe just ham, but there you go.
So, like, one of the flaws is I can't resist a pretty face. Personality traits, I fall in love, and I'm always pursuing someone, fall in and out of love. And another personality trait is I have a joke for any occasion, especially occasions where humor isn't appropriate. See? Sound familiar?
Yeah, yeah. You just created yourself. Yeah.
Yes.
I love it. Well, at least we know what your actual race is now. You're no longer Mexican, you're just
a
gnome.
I'm just a rock gnome. A rogue rock gnome.
Awesome.
But the ideals is charity. I distribute money, you know, that I acquire to people who really need it.
It's fun, really, to hear about all that stuff, because you put a lot of work into that, and people really love to put their work into those things. And as a GM, you want to make sure everyone is having fun.
Right.
So you don't really...
Number one job.
And you don't necessarily want to, like, pigeonhole someone into playing a class. You're like, well, I think we really need this class in there. If no one wants to play the cleric, sometimes...
Work around it.
Maybe have an NPC that comes along with them if you've got a smaller group. If you've got a bigger group, you can figure out different ways. Yep. There's a lot of ways to get through that. Maybe you just load them up with potions.
Yeah.
A lot of the times, that sort of thing works out. It is... like I'm stressing it a lot, but I don't think it can be stressed enough. You're there to have fun.
Yeah.
You don't want the session to end with everyone having a bad time and saying, well, that was no fun. You just killed everyone. Unless you're making a game that is like that. I played a game with the GM who was straight up. He's like, this is going to be hard mode.
Yeah.
We're calling this disposable heroes because you're probably not going to live. But it was fun because while he said you have to roll your stats and it's just 3d6, go down the line. Yeah. You pick your class beforehand. I mean, I had a warrior with a 8 strength. But it was fun to role play a character that had severe disadvantages in that aspect and still get away with stuff. I had a crossbow and it sucked because it took forever to load, but for some reason I could roll crits all the time with it. And it was able just to be awesome, and then I was able to be rewarded by the GM for sticking with a character that was rough by giving me some magical armor, and then also just being able to play a character that there's no reason why there should be an 8 strength warrior anywhere. But he was able to say, hey, you stuck with it, and we're going to let you have some fun with this. And you just got to make sure and let them know right up front what the game is going to be about.
Yeah, everyone should enter into any game session like this with full understanding of everyone's expectations. So this is another key to it. And there's so much more to it, guys. But there are some great guides and some very useful how to be a DM sites that you can visit and check that stuff out. Even just reading the DM's manual, if you've got the new 5th edition Dungeon Master's Guide, it is really, really helpful, just those first parts.
Yeah, and if you want a quick example of what not to do, the one time I played D&D, the DM designed me a rogue because I had never played before, and then had the whole campaign be undead and skeletons, which rogues do no damage against.
Yeah, I was gonna say, wow, you were pretty much on your own.
So my character killed off in the first 10 minutes of the campaign because
that's
was
when
useless.
You get drunk and hassle everyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
So don't do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah, definitely tailor stuff around that.
Exactly.
One thing like that, because I'm not really good when it comes to the whole strength, like all those little
numbers. Yeah.
Because I was sitting here, I'm like, I'm so far behind. Like, nope, you got everything. You got the heart part done, which I love building the background and the story. It's the numbers that get me. But I found this thing, and this is what helped me when I was kind of trying to figure what everything does. And it's like, I think it was a Tumblr post someone did. It says D&D stats explained with tomatoes.
I love this, actually. This is really good.
So strength,
it's hilarious, but it's awesome,
is being able to crush the tomato.
Yes.
Dexterity is being able to dodge a tomato. Mm-hmm. Constitution is being able to eat a bad tomato. Intelligence is knowing a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put a tomato in a fruit salad. And charisma is being able to sell a tomato-based fruit salad. And then I like somebody's stuff underneath. It's like, a tomato-based fruit salad would simply be salsa. And then somebody underneath throws, guys, I found the bard!
No, the bard's usually sitting in the back watching everyone else die.
Yes.
Yeah.
And singing about it.
singing a great song about it. Yeah, exactly.
So that's
actually a really good point. And so check it out, guys. I mean, if you're looking to be a better DM, there's so many resources out there for you. If you want to send me a specific question about something
I'm trouble.
Ask the GM. I love that stuff. I'm here to help. I'm a booster.
And it's about role-playing and imagination.
Yeah.
Because you can go play Diablo and get the same sort of experience, but in a different way. This is really about the imagination part.
Agreed. Yeah, exactly, just going down and telling a story.
It's so interesting as somebody who's such a newbie with all these things, because I've only played it twice, and it's both times have been with you guys. I feel like sometimes I'm like, and I was telling the guys last night when we were making up the characters, I feel like I'm cheating because I'm a rock gnome. I can do this, but then I can do this. I could steal, but then I have like my tools, so I can do my tinkering, and then I have my tools for disguise because I'm also a charlatan, and I can do this. I feel like I'm cheating because I'm getting all these things, and I'm trying. It's like when you're that kid in the playground. You're like, well, I am the Grand Dragon Slayer, Power Ranger, Ninja Turtle. I can do this. Like, that's kind of what it feels like when you're making a character. So when you're playing Dungeons and Dragons, you're like, I'm gonna do this. can I do this?
And that's a big thing. You ask the GM, hey, can I do this? I ended up...
Talk me into it.
I have a character that I was an artificer in 13th Age, and it was based off of a custom character generator. And so it has all these skills and these abilities, and I like went up to the GM, and I'm like... Hey, this isn't quite working out for me. Can I can I build a school because I want this one spell? And it was Murder Sphere because I wanted to kill people with floating spheres. And so he's like, well, if you can create a school of magic that you would have as an artificer and it would incorporate that, then sure. So if it's helping and benefit or giving benefits to your players for being creative.
Exactly. Yeah.
But no, this has been, it's been a lot of fun creating the character and just kind of getting into the world. And it seemed a lot more difficult than it actually was until I started reading. Because I kept asking questions. He's like, well, if you go to this page, you can get more info. And I'm like, oh, wait, all of it is in here. And it's a lot less daunting. It's not so much that I didn't want to read it. It just seems so daunting because there's so much.
Yeah. And
but
it's
simple.
And as a player, I would say definitely figure out the ins and outs of your character. Because like I said, as a GM, I'm not always going to know that on page X, this thing is there.
I might have to go buy my own book. I was going to borrow one, but I'm just going to have to buy it. I'm going to get my little, I already have plans. Yeah. I'm like sticky notes for all, where all my, you know, those little tab sticky notes for where all my stuff is.
Where all your references are, exactly.
Absolutely,
good
works. Yeah, it works really well.
Which side note, I kind of love it because these guys know I play games, but they don't realize how nerdy I actually am because I met them in a non-nerdy environment. So they're sitting here like, I'm like, I'm a noob, guys. Just a heads up, I'm going to ask a lot of questions. But then the fact that I'm like understanding it and I did all this, they're like, oh.
You are
a nerd girl. I don't need to bust out a card. I got this.
Right.
I got this.
Well, Vicky, since you're around, let's get to
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
Just a little short one, though.
All right, this is kind of fun.
Like you.
Yay. So, Star Trek. Any fans?
I'm listening.
Yeah. Yes. Still here.
So, we all know Bones on Star Trek. Leonard McCoy is famous for many things, mostly announcing that someone's dead or insulting Spock in a way that seems almost awfully xenophobic for Star Trek. But he's very famous for angrily explaining that he is a doctor and literally not anything else.
Damn it, Jim!
So here is the definitive ranking of the things that Dr. McCoy is not.
Ooh.
And this list includes both things original McCoy is not and things that the Kelvin Universe McCoy is not. So this does not include any other Starfleet doctor sayings that they aren't.
Oh. So just, J.J. Abrams and TOS then.
And TOS. Well, and the movies.
Oh, yeah.
But go ahead.
It's at number 10, says it's a scientist or physicist from the episode Metamorphosis. Incidentally, it is worrying that McCoy, a medical doctor, does not think he is a scientist.
Doesn't consider himself a scientist.
He's a,
I'm a doctor, not a scientist, not a physicist.
Wait.
Number 9, psychiatrist from City on the Edge of Forever.
This is true.
Yeah.
8, engineer from Mirror Mirror.
That'd be Scotty.
There you go.
Scotty.
Mechanic.
Mechanic and engineer?
Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
But you fix humans.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like
not mechanical humans.
All right, Helen, you're going to say it, and I'll say what he is.
Okay. Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a...
Torpedo technician.
Oh, that's from the movie. I remember that
darkness,
one.
Yeah.
Into the Darkness. Into Darkness, yeah.
Yep.
Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a...
Magician.
This is kind of fun.
Presto.
Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a...
Bricklayer.
Oh, I remember that episode.
The Devil in the Dark.
Devil in the Dark. Yeah, that's when he was when they were trying to. Anyway,
not a bricklayer.
Yeah, it was the Horta. I can't remember his name.
Horta.
Horchata.
Horchata. Probably not.
No. I can't remember the name of that alien species.
Next up.
Damn it, Jim! I'm a doctor, not a
coal miner.
All right. Yes.
Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a...
Moon shuttle conductor. I tried to do...
Conductor? Conductor?
Not a moon shuttle conductor.
I was trying to make a weird accent, didn't work.
No.
And
no.
Last one.
Oh, it was weird. Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a...
Escalator. From what? Friday's Child.
Not an escalator.
An escalator.
Escalator.
I want to know the conversation that revolves around that.
It says right there, escalator. I didn't say the word wrong.
I know. I'm just trying to. I don't doubt that you said it. Like,
well, I was like, at first I thought, like, crap, did I use the wrong
escalator.
Way?
Yeah, that. Nah, don't
are people riding
that.
Up him?
Oh, well, you know,
yeah,
that
people stepping
quickly.
On him while he.
Ha ha ha!
Apparently, there is a picture someone drew of someone stepping on him, like an escalator. Like,
and being an escalator. Oh, my Lord. Thank you. Yeah, now I'm going to watch that
there
episode.
There are shirts that says, I'm a doctor, not an escalator. That you should get that shirt.
Wow. That is ridiculous.
I don't feel bad for being neither.
Oh, I love it. I found a meme. It says, doctor, not to be confused with. And there's a picture of McCoy. It says, engineer, lawyer, bricklayer, bartender, singer, farmer, pilot, cook, magician, firefighter, soldier, sales representative, diplomat, accountant, police officer, sculptor, journalist, gunslinger, astrophysicist, etc.
Wow.
I was going to say, or escalator.
Well, until next time, guys, stay nerdy. Ooh, pita chip.
Your inner geek wants to come out and play, but where to go? Join Vernon Wells, the ultimate club where you and your fellow geeks can hang out, play games, and just nerd out 24/7. Whether you love RPGs, video games, or are just a major fan of sci-fi and geek culture, Vernon Wells has something for everyone. Let your geek flag fly at Vernon Wells. Sign up today and see for yourself. VNW.club. That's VNW.club.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.